Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Good evening, Happy New Year, and welcome to
Fomentified
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Cousby.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly live journey of all things fermented.
We are archived on iTunes, Stitcher, and always on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. What's going on, Mary?
Well, I'm pretty sure we have a large homebrew competition coming up in New York City.
Oh, yeah, Homebrew Alley 8. We've been doing this for 8 years now, and if you want information on how to enter, go to homebrewalley.com. Last year was homebrewalley.org. We've moved on to homebrewalley.com, so please make note of that. If you're in the New York City and you want to, and you're BJCP certified and you want to judge, or if you want to steward or volunteer, please sign up and help us out. We have a lot of entries, or we hope to, and could certainly use the help.
And there's a cap of 750 entries this year. We were quite a bit over that last year, so if you do want to enter, please go ahead and do that as soon as possible so you don't get locked out. And what date is that?
That is on February 7th and 8th at Alewife Queens. And Alewife has been a really great host for it, and we're going to have an award ceremony and party on the 8th. Hopefully we'll be done with Best of Show by 7 o'clock, and we'll be able to make the announcements and of all the winners at 7:30. But if you can't make it in person, don't worry. We'll send you notifications of your awards.
And your ribbons.
That's right. Also, New York Craft Beer Week, or New York City Beer Week, is coming up in February. Starts on February 21st. And on February 21st, we're going to have a giant, great party at Vanderbilt Hall in Grand Central Terminal. Very, very excited about that. Also, there's all sorts of events for that entire week, including Josh Bernstein's homebrew extravaganza at Jimmy's Number 43 on Saturday the 22nd. I'm hosting a cask festival at 508 Gastrobrewery featuring the New York City Brewers Guild guys and ladies, brewers of the city. We're having a closing party on that following Sunday, the March 2nd, at Houston Hall. I mean, there will be tons of stuff all around. If you're listening to this out of town, you can make it to New York. Come, it'll be a blast. And you can stay on Marinette's couch.
Or floor. There was one other announcement. Oh, I'm teaching an alternative fermentations class at Brooklyn Homebrew tomorrow night. It has sold out, so we're going to try to plan another one in as soon as possible because there have been further requests. I'm going to speak to them tomorrow night, and we'll have a date at that time. It'll be either sometime this month or maybe in February.
What kind of alternate fermentations will that include, Mary?
Well, we'll talk about short mead, kombucha, water kefir.
You're supposed to say that one last, because where we're going. That's a transition. Come on. You're winning it.
Way fermented soda and short mead. So we've had a couple of requests, and I unfortunately have been slacking and have not gotten back to people. But we do have short mead recipes. I need to update this, actually. We have it on fermentaboutit.com. This was originally published on my old blog, My Life on Craft, and I republished it on fermentaboutit. I've actually changed the technique a little bit. So you know what? I'm going to make it my goal for this week to put an updated recipe of the current process that I use in short meads. But we're just going to go through, before we get to our guest, and talk a little bit about how easy it is to make short meads. So the basic recipe, a gallon is very easy to do. I now often do 2.5-3 gallons, and I've done up to 15 gallons at a time for NHC last year. But a gallon's great. I would recommend that you get a gallon jug of spring or filtered water at your local drugstore, bodega, or wherever. The Poland Spring one is less than a gallon, so I would recommend. I know Dwayne Reed sells one that has this exactly a gallon, and I've got them for at different 99-cent stores and local grocery stores that are a gallon. I used to use 2 pounds of honey. I now normally use somewhere between 1 1/4 pound and 1 1/2 pounds, depending how strong you want it to be. 2 pounds of honey really gets you a pretty. It's not so short of a mead. I would say it's a medium mead. And a short mead, I would recommend, you know, somewhere between either 1 1/3 pound or 1 1/2 pounds of honey. Champagne yeast, I use Lalvin EC118. I've also used the Red Star brand or the Red Star type. You want a gasket and an airlock, although these are not essential. You could use a little bit of cheesecloth or muslin fabric and a rubber band. I sometimes use Go Firm. Again, not essential. Star sand, and then I like a little bit of, I just used my regular Y-yeast beer nutrient yeast. So any kind of nutrient, you don't have to use the same type of nutrient that you would for regular strength meads, I've found. And then you want any kind of your flavoring. So we just made a cranberry short mead for the holidays. I'm going to be kegging that up tomorrow. And for that, Trader Joe's introduced freeze-dried cranberries. All of the Trader Joe's freeze-dried products are great. Just make sure they don't have any oil or additives in them at all. They're just straight up fruit. So I picked up a bag of the Trader Joe's freeze-dried cranberries. I used a little bit of star anise, some cloves, and about half a stick of cinnamon. This is for a 2.5-gallon batch. Now, the thing with spices is that it's really variable on how strong or how fresh they are. So I actually had some star anise that I've had around for a while that I bought in a small container. And then I had ordered some from the Monterey Bay, I think it's Monterey Bay Trading Company. They do wonderful spices. And man, those things are so fresh and so wonderful. They're a completely different animal. So I had to use much less of those than, you know, this old star anise that I had this older jar of. So really, I think with your spice mix, you know, don't go overboard, obviously. It's always a little bit better to undershoot it because you can always add a little bit of spice tea at the end when you're getting ready to either bottle or keg it. It really is just going to, you're just going to need to play with it depending on how fresh your spices are because that really does make a big difference. So I go ahead and squash up those cranberries. They kind of powder. You can do it with a rolling pin or I did them with a small food presser actually this last time. I did heat up some water and wet that down and made a little spice tea. I don't think it's good. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do boiling water. We're not really thinking about sanitizing stuff as much. So basically what I do is I weigh out you empty about 4 cups of water out of this jug.
So this is from the beginning.
Yeah.
Right here.
Okay. So those are the ingredients and this is how you make it. You're going to remove around 3 to 4 cups of water from your jug. You're going to take 2 of those cups, or you know, somewhere between 1 and 2 cups. You want to make your tea with that. So go ahead and heat that up. You can heat it to boiling if you want to. I don't think it's necessary. Pour that over your spices so that you make basically a tea with your spices. You can also add your cranberries as well. I would do the smallest amount that you can, maybe a cup or a cup and a half of water. then go ahead and put your water jug on a scale, zero out your scale, add your honey somewhere, like I said, between 1 1/4 to 1 1/2 pounds of honey. For per gallon.
So the reason you take the water out is to make sure that you have room for the honey in the same vessel that you got the water.
Absolutely. From. Now you can also do this in a carboy or any kind of, you know, I've used food grade buckets before. You can do it in any vessel. I just think this 1 gallon batch using the store bought gallon is super easy because you don't have to worry about filtering your water. It's already filtered for you, and it's just a very easy way to do it. So then go ahead and. Put the cap back on and shake the heck out of that honey water mixture. You want to make sure that nothing is sticking to the bottom. So you want to make sure it's fully incorporated. Then go ahead and pour filter off your spices and you want to leave your cranberries in there. So actually, if you put your cranberries in your spice mixture, whatever fruit you're going to use, strawberries, blueberries, etc., you don't want to filter those out. So go ahead and add the whole thing. You can worry about the spices later. And then you want to add your yeast. You should have enough. If you don't have enough, you can top it off with a little more water at this point. You want to make sure that you're below 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Go ahead and pitch your yeast. You would have wanted to add your yeast nutrients at the time that you add your tea. So just like you would, you know, normally you add those 10 minutes before the end of the boil, go ahead and just add them when you make your tea.
Add the yeast nutrients into your tea or into...
Yeah, into your tea. And then, so going forward, you know, now you've pitched your yeast, your mixture is below 70 degrees Fahrenheit, you've mixed your yeast, and you're going to let it ferment. You can either... What I've done, you can use a bong, actually, the right size as your plastic. What I've done is just cut out a space or cut out a circle, added a gasket that I bought at my local homebrewing store, and put my AeroLock in the gasket.
And by cut, she means use a soldering tool to
melt. I did it with an X-Acto knife, and then I did find that I have a soldering iron.
It works pretty
well. Yes, it's much easier to do with a soldering iron. But if you don't have a soldering iron, then, you know, just use your X-Acto knife. It works pretty darn well as well. And that's it. So you don't want to let this ferment out all the way, because it'll... I mean, you do if you want it really dry and a little bit stronger, but we generally give this about a week and a half, 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it depends. I've done some with lapsing Souchong tea, but that actually slows down fermentation. So it takes longer. So just go ahead and, you know, I don't even think you need to take a hydrometer reading. You just want to make sure that it's to the... to the sweetness that you want it, to the flavor that you want it.
But if you do end up forgetting about it, or if you don't have time, if you made it for Christmas and you forgot about Christmas, like where we are with this cranberry, mm-hmm. you know, like we're going to kick it, it might be a little drier than we wanted it. You can always sweeten back and add more honey just to get that sweetness.
Yeah, and now lately I have these very cute 1.75-gallon kegs now. I use those in 3-gallon kegs mostly. So I really like to keg this short mead. I like to crash it at around 30, 32 degrees. So I just turn my chest freezer down a little bit. So crash it to where it's pretty much freezing. It clears it up right away. You just need to go overnight or during the day. Then go ahead and rack that off into either your bottles or your keg. If you're going to do bottles, I like the IKEA flip-top bottles. You want to let them sit out for maybe 12 to 24 to 36 hours until they're properly carbonated, and stick them in the freezer. Now, as this mead is still fermenting, this is slightly risky. So if you're worried about exploding bottles or that type of thing, which I do now that I've had some bottles explode of water kefir, you can also use the plastic bottle. So I just got a bunch of those 16-ounce brown plastic bottles from my local homebrew store, Brooklyn Homebrew, and I think those are great to do this kind of mead in. I think my favorite is still kegging at this point. But I think if you wanted to be safe and sound and serve delicious short mead to your friends, go ahead and use those brown plastic bottles. And that's it. That's short mead. It's really easy. It's delicious. And I encourage you to experiment.
Mary Isette, short on short mead. The short on short mead.
And now let's get to our actual guests. So we have Kevin Stafford and Basil Lee of the soon-to-open Finback Brewery in Queens, New York.
Is that accurate? You guys are open. You guys are... You just don't have beer out yet.
We are soon to be open. We've got beer in the fermenters.
Yes.
We're trying to get our kegging maybe next week or so. We're waiting on... It's like every little step has a delay in it, but we're waiting for a couple of additional things, and hopefully end of January we'll have our beer at some of your favorite bars in the city.
We're very excited about that. Who are you? Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you doing? We know you very well, but, you know, I'm not sure on the other side of this. We've known you quite a long time, and you guys have been making amazing homebrews, and some very inspiring homebrews, incorporating teas and elixirs and things of the like. How long have you been brewing? How do you guys know each other? Or where are we at with that? You know,
I've been brewing for about 8 years.
Okay.
It all started with a Mr. Beer kit that I got for Christmas. Uh-huh. I brewed
Senor
on that.
Cerveza.
Yeah, pretty good. I made some really good beer with that, I have to say. It was good. I brewed with that for maybe about 2 years, slowly made my way to extract brewing, and then eventually to all grain brewing. And then I've been co-brewing with Basil for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been experimenting with a lot of different ingredients and just having fun with the whole making beer process.
You guys make great stuff from what I've had.
Oh, thank you.
I think we made one nice too together.
Oh, yeah. We did. That was super fun. I mean, I think it's really interesting because getting into home brewing, for me, was always, you know, it was about, you know, drinking and really liking beer, you know, and I think like liking different beers and really from, you know, from as long as I could legally and maybe even before I could legally drink, you know, it was always about, you know, trying to experiment with, you know, different things and whether at the time was imported or craft beers, and kind of being able to brew your own beer is taking that to the next step.
Yeah.
And I think for us in New York, you know, and really meeting you guys and the whole the kind of New York City homebrewers kind of community is that it's such a great community for homebrewing, and it's getting better and better, and that, you know, really just kind of strengthened our interest and ultimately our kind of pursuit of it, and then ultimately now into a, I guess, what's soon to be a commercial kind of scale brewery.
Yeah, and we're going to take a really quick break, and I really wanted to get to, you know, this step you guys are taking to this big. You've gone from 5 gallons to
20 barrels.
To 20 barrels, and, you know, it's quite a jump. We're going to take a quick break. I'm for Men About It, Heritage Radio Network.
Stay tuned.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. This community-oriented company was built on a vision of providing ecologically responsible and ethically produced food to area consumers. During a typical week at the Regional Access warehouse, they help move thousands of pounds of natural and grass-fed meat, gallons of farm-fresh dairy, and tons of organic and specialty foods from producer to market. Having been in the distribution business for almost 25 years, Regional Access's experience and knowledge make them uniquely equipped to build out their region's food web. Up in the Finger Lakes, Regional Access will continue to champion the region's bounty and work toward a sustainable food system for the entire Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. So Chris and I are here in the studio with Basil Lee and Kevin Stafford of Finback Brewing. Is it Finback Brewing or Finback Brewing Company?
Finback Brewery.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Finback Brewery. You might call it Finback. So you're going from 5 gallons to 20 barrels, just jumping straight away. And you guys have already started doing some brewing. What have you learned from that? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's the business aspect. There's getting this whole thing together.
The building inspection con ed.
Oh, yeah. Doing it in New York. So how hard was it to find a space, first of all? How long have you been looking and thinking about doing this? You guys have been brewing together 4 years. How, why, where?
So, I mean, we've been brewing together, you know, 4 years, drinking together for much longer than that. And I think, you know, we, you know, even very early on, it was always about, you know, thinking about where we could, how we could kind of keep doing it, how we could kind of take it, you know, further to the next level. And in New York City, there was always this kind of idea that we needed more kind of local craft breweries, let's say. You know, we have a couple really great ones that have been around for a long time, and it was kind of like New York City was lacking, compared to other cities, you know, the kind of, whatever, the third wave of kind of craft breweries. And so we were really interested in it. And I think, you know, maybe 3 years ago, we started in earnest to kind of put together a business plan and kind of, in a way, have the kind of dream about, or the pursuit of this passion of opening a brewery. And Kevin can talk more about, you know, finding a space, because he really took care of that. That was an insane ordeal, I'd say.
Yeah, that took a really long time. We were looking for a space for over a year. You know, I don't even remember what it was, 14, 16 months?
Yeah.
Were you guys always settle on starting with a 20 barrel versus anything smaller or larger?
No, originally we wanted a 15 barrel system, but after going to CBC in San Diego 2 years ago, we decided to up it. The price difference wasn't that much, so we decided to go with 20 barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what were some of the kind of trials and tribulations that you guys came across in looking for the space?
The Yeah, there's a lot. Originally, we started looking in the Gowanus area in Bushwick. We really wanted to be in Brooklyn, but we just couldn't find a suitable space. You know, buildings were falling apart. They were too expensive. They didn't have drains or, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a crazy thing because even from the time we started looking at space to the time we actually got a space, I think that, you know, just even like manufacturing space, rents went up a lot. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a space that we really fell in love with. It's just around the corner from here in Bushwick. That was kind of the perfect space. It was 5,000 square foot. And then, you know, the building owner, I think, just had a sense that the neighborhood was really on the up and up. And we negotiated with him for 3 months. And we thought the deal was going to get done. And you know, we drew up plans. We had contractors walk through and everything. And kind of last minute, it fell through. And so it was really kind of gut-wrenching in some ways, right? You think we were planning for a year before then, and each of these steps, it's like another hurdle. But in some ways, it makes it that much more rewarding when you do kind of get past each of these hurdles. And then in the end, you know, we started looking in Long Island City, and through some really, you know, some great real estate kind of brokers, it just helped us, really. They kind of knew, you know, we were pretty new to this whole thing about New York real estate and starting a business in New York. So they were really helpful in just kind of taking us all over the city. There are parts of the city we'd never seen before. And slowly, you know, we landed in a spot in Queens, in Glendale. And it's a beautiful spot. It's bigger than anything we looked at. And that gave us, you know, in a way, it just opened our eyes into the potential of what we could do with a bit more space. Mm-hmm. It's a little further out there, but I kind of like that it's more of a destination in some ways, and it's going to give us that flexibility to do, you know, a lot of fun things like barrel aging. We're doing a sour program. And so I think in the end, it turned out really for the best, getting that space.
Your perseverance was rewarded. So let's talk about that, what you're going to be brewing and what you are brewing and kind of what's the philosophy of Finback, or is there one?
Well, right now we've brewed three beers. We did an IPA, a smoked porter, mm-hmm. and a wit beer brewed with ginger and Szechuan peppercorns. And from there, I think we're gonna start experimenting with a lot of different ingredients and just different styles. We're not gonna stick to any set guidelines for a particular style, but we're just gonna experiment and have fun.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is exactly like, to me, that's the philosophy. Like, I keep thinking about, you know, what's our philosophy? What's the kind of core of Finback's beer? And I think for both of us, we have creative backgrounds. And then we, you know, obviously have this homebrew background, which is really about experimentation and about constantly learning, constantly talking with people and kind of engaging and doing the things that, you know, aren't about, you know, finding that one beer that's going to sell really well and then just keep making it, right? It's about really having a good time to make beers that you can share with people.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, is the philosophy in many ways.
And I think that just the kind of drinker that is being created right now, I mean, when we go to the bar, like, I know more and more people that when they go to a bar, they're looking for the beer they haven't had yet.
Right.
And so, you know, and bars that don't no longer have specific lines for one brewery, they just keep rotating the whole thing. I mean, our favorite bars, you know, Blind Tiger, Jimmy's, and places of the like, are constantly rotating. And I think it's a fun philosophy to constantly rotate your own.
Absolutely,
as a brewer.
And they make it so interesting. They make the, you know, the kind of beer scene in New York City so interesting. You can always go to these bars, and you know they're having events, and you're like, wow, I haven't had that. There's another beer I haven't tried, and it always keeps it fresh and new, and you know, and you're always just kind of you know, looking for new and interesting things.
Absolutely. One thing I did want to bring up, so we did a collaboration, and we used Lapsang Souchong tea, and I thought that beer was very good, called Baby Got Finback 508. Finback collaboration. It was very fun. You guys did a lot of brewing and experimenting with teas on a homebrew level. What have you learned through the different teas that you've done? Or,
well, we experimented with green tea a little bit.
Yeah.
We made Finback Summer. It was our summer beer. It was brewed with ginger, lemon zest, orange zest, and green tea. Green tea had you know, really subtle flavors, but I think it really added to the complexity of the Finback summer beer. It only being about 4.5%, but that you know, subtle flavor really made it.
What was your technique when you used the tea? Because I know it can be kind of a finicky thing, and does it change with the kind of tea that you do? Like, I'm talking like, you know, versus the last 5 minutes, or versus how we did it when we did our collaboration. We made the tea separately and we blended in the kegs to kind of control.
Yeah, experimenting at home. I always threw it in the last 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and I kept it in during you know, the cooling process. But yeah, I mean, that's all I've done with it. But
yeah, just exactly kind of like at flame out. Well, I think this in either case. It seems like we found that, you know, they've worked for different things. I think for the lobsang soup cheng, it was really kind of important, especially as, you know, as, and the point that Mary just made was that it, you know, how it affects fermentation and putting it in at the right time so that you can kind of balance that and you're kind of aware of that.
Right.
I think for the, you know, agree, that collaboration was super fun. And I think, you know, first I want to say that it's amazing what you do at 508. You know, I think, yeah. that, you know, brewing with you there, you see how, you know, brewers are so, kind of you know, the kind of ingenuity of brewers, right? It's like you have your system and you make amazing stuff on it, and you can always get more toys and more gadgets, but ultimately the process of brewing is, you know, it's whether it's a 5 gallon or a 20 barrel, whether it's like a really tricked out expensive system or a kind of homemade thing, you still make great beer. It's,
you know, learning your system and, you know, working through all that, yeah. no matter what size it is and what it is. Agreed. Thank you.
And you guys are going to have a pilot system, or you have a pilot system.
We have a 20-gallon pilot system, and so we're going to do. And the idea there is that, you know, we're starting with kind of three beers that we're trying to kind of distribute with, let's say. But at the we're going to have a tasting room at the brewery, and so we want to do, you know, just a rotating list of beers, and really just kind of do different things. Mm-hmm. And it also gives us, I think, the flexibility to keep. Kind of collaborations going, so we don't have to do 20 barrel batches at a time, but we really want to kind of engage all of our friends and the community in making beer. I think, you know, for me, a big part of it is, you know, even though it's been, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years in planning, in some ways it's like it's still very early on in terms of our professional kind of brewing careers. Sure. And I see it as, to me, the brewery is, I see it as kind of a platform for doing fun things and fun collaborations and kind of the same culture that you had as a home brewer, but on a kind of commercial right. scale,
mm-hmm. and being able to share that with the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, I think it's exciting because the New York City Brewers Guild is, I mean, they're growing. Yeah. It's, you know, definitely grown even from last year. And I think we've been to a couple events, not only the fundraiser, but the event at Jimmy's that you guys came to. And it's great to see everybody supporting each other and,
right.
you know, and collaborating, yep. and just having this community. So I think
absolutely.
That's
rising tide floats all boats, or something like that. something like that. Oh man!
So, what are the rooms? What are the plans for the tasting room?
So, the tasting room. I mean, it's we're keeping the space really kind of spare, you know, and it's still very much, and we kind of like that aesthetic where it's going to be, you know, concrete floors, white walls. We're going to have like nice wood tables, but all very simple. You know, I think that both Kevin and I, we, you know, we have this aesthetic that comes from a more creative background. You know, I was an architect, Kevin's a graphic designer, and so kind of bringing some of that aesthetic into the brewery, you know, and having, you know, maybe fun things to look at on the walls and just, but keep it really simple and let the beer kind of just be a place for enjoying beer.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully by the summertime, if all goes well, although everything has taken longer, obviously, than we've hoped. But we've got a little backyard space that we just want to put some tables and chairs at. And the neighborhood we're in is actually, it's very residential. It's a great neighborhood. You know, the people are, you know, really, you know, it's just like a friendly neighborhood. And I think there isn't much like that out there, or there really isn't anything like that out there. So I think, you know, having just a comfortable spot where you can come and hang out and have a couple beers, I think is the kind of place we want to make.
Awesome.
Speaking of you know, knowing your system, what have you learned on your going from 5 to 20? So you got three. Any snags and any fun? Was, I mean, these don't always come with manuals.
Yeah. let's say that first beer. the big. Hump that we had to get over, or we didn't even think of when we made our first beer. We didn't preheat the mash tun, and that kind of screwed us a little bit. the mash temp was all over the place. It was really hard getting our 149 temperature. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing.
She did a giant step.
Yeah, yeah. And then beyond that, I don't know. We adjusted the crush of the grain on the mill. Mm-hmm. The first beer we made, the brew house efficiency was only about 80%. And then after adjusting it, we're up to 94%.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
yeah. I think the first beer we made, you know, I think it was kind of like super fun just because it's like, wow, we're actually doing this.
Yeah.
But
on your very own system.
On your very system. Yeah, I know exactly, right? It's like these giant stainless steel tanks have been sitting here for months, and finally. But I think you know, maybe the kind of funnest and most nightmarish part of the night was dealing with our spent grain, you know. And it's kind of like we're so far behind that we're like, okay, we have to brew. Let's just do it. Let's dive in. And you know, we knew we had to do something with this spent grain. You know, when we first started the day, but come the end of the night, we didn't really have a thought out strategy yet. Mm-hmm. So it was basically, you know, we had some great help from friends. We were all there, and we were just, you know, it was late night. It was a 16-hour day, and we were just packing these, you know, those heavy duty black Home Depot garbage bags. We had 20 of them with, like, you know, 80 pounds of grain in each one. It was a pain.
No doubt.
I want to mention something real quick. This is totally off subject, but I want to make, we're about to be done. I'm getting the sign. He's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, Joe Galarraga says. But this has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. The music that is the theme music for our show is from my old friend Chris Berry, and he's in town, and he's doing a show at BAM. It's a kind of a creative storytelling show, and I just support it if you can. It's be beautiful. It's on February 21st, February 22nd, first 2 days of Craft Beer Week. And now back to our regular scheduled program.
No, we want to thank you guys for being here. We will undoubtedly have you back in the future.
Yeah, I can't wait to taste the goods, man. It's pretty. Yeah, so wait, when did you make that first beer, and how's it fermenting away? What you know?
We made it the week before Thanksgiving.
Okay,
and then we brewed pretty much maybe a week after and a week after. Mm-hmm. So all the tanks are full, fermenting. Great. We've been tasting them throughout the whole process. I think they're all coming out.
Yeah. We just started cold crushing the IPA and the porter.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
I think, and before we run out of time, I just want to say, you know, thank you, Chris and Mary, for inviting us. I mean, this is awesome. You know,
yeah,
we listen to
you.
This all the time. God, whenever we're brewing at home, we've got this on. So thanks a lot for having us.
Thank you for coming.
And to look for Finback Beers towards the end of the month, February.
Yeah,
We'll be in Asia for the end of January. Beginning of February, but we'll have some tape shows, but we'll definitely remind everybody when we start seeing your kegs out there.
Awesome.
And let everybody know, you know, where they can get them as well.
That's right. And we'll celebrate the hell out of it during Craft Beer Week.
Exactly.
All right, well, ferment about it. Cheers, and thank you. Thank you, Kevin Basil, Finback Brewery.
We'll be
back. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Jaren. Thanks, Joe Galarraga. Thank you, World. And we'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back next Monday live at 7 p.m.
Maybe kimchi, maybe other stuff.
Yep. Likely kimchi, though, hopefully.
Forget about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.